The Senate will please come back to order. First item of business is messages from the House.
February the 10th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 163, Critical Access Hospital Endowment Challenge Program, ayes 60. House Bill Number 174, Nicotine Products Regulation, ayes 40, noes 20. House Bill Number 224, Burn Order Violation Restitution, ayes 54, noes 6. House Bill Number 235, Foreign Business Entities Reinstatement, ayes 59, noes 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business of introducing House bills on first reading. House Bill 114, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 114, Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act. Sponsored by Representative Yagi. Passed the House on third reading. Ayes 42, noes 17. Excused 1.
House Bill 114 is assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 209, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 209, Transfer of Federal Land. Sponsored by Representative Miller. Passed the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 36, noes 22, excused 2.
House Bill 209 is assigned to Committee Number 11, Journal. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, without objection, I'd like to reassign House Bill 209 to Senate 12 Rules.
Well, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I've heard your objection, but it's assigned to Committee Number 11. I'm sure that they'll give it the consideration to which it's entitled.
Well, but Mr. President, I don't have a very good relationship with that chairman. I'm not sure he will hear the bill.
Yeah, I just give him a hug every morning. Reports from standing committee.
February the 10th, 2015. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 13, engrossed State Park Use of Fees, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 10th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 19, Registered Investment Advisors, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 10th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 20, Clarification of Duties of Treasurer's Office, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business of bills on general file.
Well, Mr. President, I just checked my responsibility, and after what you did at 209, I'm not sure I have to do anything else today. Maybe I should ask for a call of the Senate to see how they feel about that, Mr. President. Good luck, huh?
There's a process for every bill.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself and the committee of the whole discuss bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Kinski.
The committee that...
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
One strike of the gavel.
The committee of the whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 72. Clerk will please read the title.
House Bill number 72, Volunteer Firefighter and EMT Pension Account, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. It was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wassenberger. Conflict, Senator Byrne, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 72, Volunteer Firefighter. An EMT pension account, and for an explanation of the bill, I yield the floor to the good senator from Natrona County.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, today I bring for the Senate's consideration House Bill 72, which is a volunteer firefighter and EMT pension account. Mr. Chairman, this is a committee bill by the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee. And what this bill does, and maybe if I can just share with the body a couple of things it does before we start into the bill and what the purpose behind this was. What we have in this bill, Mr. Chairman, is we have a combination of the existing volunteer firefighter plan and then a plan that was struggling on the actuarial side of the EMT pension account. And so what this bill is going to do is combine those two into one healthy account. It's also going to provide a modest increase to the benefits the volunteer firefighter plan has. The kind of the genesis or the guiding principles behind this was that we kind of took the best parts from no plan. No one really received, Mr. Chairman, any kind of decrease in their pension. There was a slight bump, and I'll explain why we think that's important. As we go out, Mr. Chairman, I think it's important to recognize that across our state, the volunteer firefighters and volunteer EMTs provide a significant portion of our state safety net for individuals that find themselves in trouble or in accidents, whether at the workplace or traveling or on recreation. We have approximately about 4,000 volunteer firefighters in the state of Wyoming and about a little over maybe 1,200, if I remember the testimony right, of volunteer EMTs. We compare that, Mr. Chairman, with approximately around 1,000 full-time firefighters. When we find out that when we look at this, is about 80% of our safety net consists of volunteer firefighters that are out there on the road doing that. We find that in some of those instances, they answer almost, in some cases, as many, if not in some cases, more than our full-time firefighters. So what we have and what we've got as a problem is we've got some actuarial issues with one of the plans. We also find that we have dwindling numbers of volunteers in both EMT and firefighting. And let me share with you an analysis that was done just on the EMT subsidy. And when I talk about the EMT subsidy, I'm talking about the subsidy to the state of Wyoming because we have such dedicated and so many volunteers that come to this. The labor donated by just the Wyoming Emergency Medical Services, or if you did it this way, if there was a volunteer hour was approximately $23.16 per hour, since you have ambulances and EMTs have to be on station 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, what that is that would be about, for two persons to attend an ambulance and be at an ambulance ready, that's about $405,000 one year for one ambulance. If you take that across the 56 ambulance units that are out there, Mr. Chairman, that would be in excess of $22,000, almost just under $23 million, $23 million of services that are provided a year. So what we have, the bill before us, is something that hopefully will continue to create security and also hopefully provide a continued incentive for individuals to volunteer. If you go, I'll take us through the bill very quickly. And it's a long bill. It's a little bit complicated, and I'll try and be succinct as I go through it. The first several pages, probably through pages 2 through page 5, and on to the top of page 6 is the definition section. We can then go to the middle of page 6. We find out in the next several pages what we're doing is we're combining in section 359916. We're combining both the firefighter and the EMT pension accounts. They're going to merge into one pension account. There'll be the membership will essentially be the same as the existing plans. That comes over here. We see that all current EMTs are included on lines 12 through 20 on page 7. All current volunteer firefighters are included through the bottom of page 7 and the top of page 9. We have we're providing the middle of page 8 some flexibility benefit that's at least equal to or greater than the benefit we find later set in the bill. We go to the bottom of page 8. We're just requirements for an annual audit. I pointed out at the page of top 9 that we had the language that we've done consistently as we dealt with pensions in the last few years, clarifying that once the account is created and the state has paid its required contributions, that the state has no additional liability beyond the amount of the funds available to the account. So once we accrue and appropriate and pay over to this account what we're owed, there's no future obligation to the state to come in later and do anything else. We're not prohibited from, but we're not required to. Then we go down through the next section, bottom of page 9, across to the top of page 10, talks about receiving gifts and donations made by individuals, organizations, including cities, towns, counties, or other political subdivisions of the state, which also include certain special districts. We get to the top of page, bottom of page 10, we start through the contribution section so that we have any contributions. So if a county elects to provide these services or members' contributions are withheld, there's a requirement that those contributions actually be paid over to the fund. We have, in the middle of page 11, we're excluding anybody who's participating in these plans are excluded from participation in Fireman A or Fireman B. Then we have on bottom of page 9 over to page 11 and to the top, through page 13, we have death benefits for certain individuals. But before we get that, we have the actual benefit, as you see there in 11, is the monthly payment to a member during the member's remaining lifetime once they is $16 per year of service for the first 10 years of service, and after that, $19 per year of service over 10 years of service. So that's how you establish and calculate the benefit. And B and C, we've got passes away, their surviving spouse gets two-thirds of their benefit, whatever they were entitled to. And under C, which is bottom of page 12 and over to 13, this, if there are surviving children but no surviving spouse, one-third of the member's benefit goes to the survivor's children. We also have language, if you go to middle of page 15, we have it talks about their that the contribution rate is $15 per month, which may be made by or on behalf of the member. So if there's a district that's paying for that, they can pay. If there's a volunteer district that's paying that, they can pay that, or the firefighter can pay that directly themselves. Either way works. We get over to page 15. We know that there's a five-year vesting plan. Then we go over to page 16. We've got the term of service and reinstatement. If you're in there and you've been there for a period of time and you leave the volunteer service for a while and come back, you can be reinstated in there as long as you weren't gone and basically continue on as before, as long as you weren't gone longer than you served before you left. So if you have been a firefighter or been an EMT for 6 or 7 years in this plan, you left, you could leave for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years, as long as you came back within a time period no longer than the time you had served before, then you can be into the plan. You also have the ability to draft in there or to pay in. You can buy in certain numbers of years with some limitation. We've got, if there's a death benefit on the bottom of page 17, we're clarifying that we're clarifying what that is. And so if the spouse passes away and has a survivor benefit is being paid out, she's been getting the retirement, and then that spouse passes away, that's how you calculate kind of the vested benefit of this $5,000 benefit that goes out if there's any left to be paid for both spouses. Surviving spouse passes away at the top of page 18, if the surviving spouse passes away with children or children only, then there's in over page 18. We've got in the middle of page 19, we have the same limitations for these pensions before COLAs can be granted. Same limitations here as we have on all other pensions that we did several years ago. We've got at the bottom of page 19, we're clarifying that death benefits paid under this plan are in addition to any workers' compensation death benefits. And on page 20, we're establishing the board and how they are. It consists of 6 members, the volunteer firefighters with at least 5 years of service, and 1 volunteer member, an EMT, who has at least 5 years of service. All appointments are made by the governor. We've got some language about the board transition to that on top of page 21. We've got the basic things dealing with the board and the administration, pages 21, 22. We've got the purchase service of credit, 23, where you can come in as long as you pay an amount that is actuarially, easy for me to say, actuarially sound for the contribution to buy those certain years of benefit. That's what we do through page 24. We're paying for this by increasing the amount of, this is the bottom of page 4 and top of 25. We're paying for this by increasing the amount of the fire insurance premium tax is currently being used partially for this. If I remember right, it was currently 50% of 24%, and this will raise it to 70% of 30% of those fireman premiums. That's how we pay for the additional contributions here over and above what's the contribution paid for by the firefighters themselves. We've got the bottom of page 25. We've got this set up so that 70% continues until it's 107% of actuarial funding, which the estimate was that would be in 2025 or approximately 10 years. But, of course, things will go up and down. At that point in time, it will drop back to 60% from 70%. Going back there, we've got some language on page 26. Because of this, there is some potential priority issues with respect to the tax that's available from the Wyoming Small Business Investment Credit, so we're clarifying the priority and how those demands will be dealt with there. And you see there on the last page where we have we go from 50% to 70% and from 26% to 30% dealing with those fire and casualty premiums. We have certain repeals. The repealers are basically repealing in section 3 of the bottom page 27, repealing the old plans. And then section 4, we create the account. Section 5, we want this to continue. We want these individuals to participate. And then section 6 is some reports back. So we make sure that we understand what's going on there, that we're updated, and we continue to look at the actual soundness of these plans as it goes forward. Section 7 is the effective date, which would be July 1st of this year. With that, that's the explanation. I'd stand for questions and urge your support for this important bill.
Further discussion, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, as a beneficiary of this particular retirement fund, I'd like to declare a conflict on this bill.
Further discussion, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I've got a number of questions that I'd like to ask with respect to the bill that's before us, and if all the information is not available, I'd ask that the information be provided. It's by second reading. First of all, with respect to the accounts that are being transferred into this, that are being merged, if you will, into this account, what is the actuarial status of those accounts? Are they 100% funded or less than 100% funded? Second, do we have an actuarial report showing that the creation of this fund will be or is actuarially sound for at least 30 years beyond the time of, as we stand here today, that is, the 30-year period being generally the lifetime of the those people that are likely to take benefits out? We've seen over and over that actuaries say we think it's okay, the retirement board may say it's okay, but do we have that actuarial study? Who is the actuary? Has the report been filed somewhere where we can go back and look at it for to challenge at a later date? With respect to the benefits that are being implied, I assume this is a defined benefit plan. Would you give us an example of a typical benefit earned? That is, how much is the employee, or this, how much is going to be contributed per person? What can they expect to withdraw so that we can see on the floor that this is a plan that's constructed to be actuarially sound? I also would like to have more discussion with respect to, we put in provisions in the big plan being the large plan that ensures that provides retirement benefits for most state employees. We put explicit terms requiring that, one, specifying that this is not an obligation of the state, this the state's only obligation is for the benefits, and we require that the employee signs a statement at the time that they begin receiving benefits, that they understand that the retirement is their retirement plan, that the state has no fiscal responsibility for the plan, and that the benefits that are paid into it are is the only state obligation. Have we done that for this plan? And if so, where will we find it in the bill? Thank you.
Further discussion, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to answer some of those questions. And the first one is to ask about the present status before these two are combined. And, of course, the firemen have had a retirement plan for many, many years, and we can present those exact numbers to you, but the actuarial soundness is running around 80%. The EMTs, you may recall about 5 years ago where we did a one-time appropriation of, and the numbers escaped me exactly what it was, about $1.5 million to get that plan started. And then there were about 170 people that opted into that plan. They were paying $12.50 a month for their part of it, which is the same, by the way, that the volunteer firemen pay at the present time. And that plan and that money now has been spent down to $274,000. So that $274,000 that sits there in the EMT retirement fund, obviously it's not actuarially sound. There's no way to really take care of that plan, and it's a bill that we had last year to try to deal with it that failed because they're just the mechanism set up was just not working. So what you've done by rolling the EMT into the volunteer fireman, you've taken that liability and that cash and rolled it into the volunteer fireman to come up with the bill that you have now. In terms of the actuarial soundness, and there's a report that's been put together by the Wyoming Retirement System, that the two combinations with the mechanism set up for the fire prevention insurance up to the limits that are prescribed in the bill, and, by the way, Mr. Chairman, that the volunteer firemen are paying the $12.50 up to the $15, so they've got some skin in the game. By 2025, that plan will be 101.9% actuarially sound. And these are numbers that were presented to us by the Wyoming Retirement System. I have some numbers to give you an idea on what the difference would be in terms of service. And I'll talk with some of the colleagues that I know that have retired with 25 years of service presently. They would get about $330 a month, Mr. Chairman, and with this they would increase about $70 per month. So I want the senators to be sure and understand that this combination retirement plan does give those existing firemen that have put, you know, so many years of service in a boost to their retirement. They've had no COLA for a long time, and quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, the service they provide, this is something we could do for them. And I believe that answers most of the questions. It is a defined benefit plan. As to where the language about whether or not it's constitutional in the sense that the state of Wyoming has no obligation to it, only the retirees have that obligation, the plan itself. I'd have to double-check in the bill, but I'm sure that's in the bill. If it's not actually in the bill, it's by reference.
Further discussion? Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to declare a conflict on this as well, but just a little background, you know, why I think this is really important, particularly for volunteer firemen. As you might or might not know, I served for 23 years up in Cody and did something like 4,600-plus different calls and didn't do EMS and car wrecks, you know, all the nasty stuff that the paid guys do. But there's so much, the demands right now even to be a volunteer are incredible. The training you have to go through, I know our guys up there, we operate out of main station, 30 guys. The training's intense, at least 6 hours a month. We average somewhere around 325 calls a year, and that's not counting EMS because they do EMS full-time up there at West Park. But the real problem is the demands on these firemen today, particularly when it comes to training and certification, and you have to be certified in certain areas. There's Firefighter 1, Firefighter 2, Firefighter 3, engineer status, and then officer status. And they train approximately, up at my place, they train approximately 6 hours a month. Once a year, they take every piece of hose that's in the station, and that might be 30 to 35,000 feet of hose. They lay it out in the street and test it on weekends. But the biggest problem we're having because of the demands, and it's taking place in, and I know in Riverton as well as it is in Cody, which are two of the larger operations in the state, the demands, it's hard, it's getting harder and harder to recruit people to do that, to volunteer to do that. And I know that Riverton's down on people right now. We're down a couple of people. It's just not as easy as it used to be. There's a certain amount of liability when you're out there doing stuff, and this would be a valuable tool as an incentive to get some young guy, and it's for young guys, not old guys like me, some young guy to say, hey, I'm going to volunteer to do a lot of something for nothing. And so this is a very important bill. I do have a conflict on this bill. If I heard the majority floor leader right, I might go up $21 a month in what I'm getting currently. 27? Anyway, I urge that you support the bill. I think it's very important for the volunteers. We started our discussion right after the Dubois deal, which was awful, and those guys, you know what they did up there. So I urge that you support the bill.
Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't have a conflict on this bill. But, Mr. Chairman, I do say that the only conflict I guess I would is that, you know, there's a lot of people getting EMT services and fire protection, and their insurance rates are a lot lower because of it. And we're not paying $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year for an employee. We've got a little incentive program here for retirement. This is a good deal. Let's pass this bill forward.
Further discussion, back to the sponsor, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll get the, as the majority floor leader said, we'll get the information and get it out to the floor on the first read. I think there was one other question. It was about the explicit term on liability, and that's at the top of The explicit term on liability is at the top of page 9, line B. The account created by the section we've just, some of the new section, shall be administered without liability on part of the state beyond the amount of funds available to the account. And so I will check and also report back. I don't know about the participant or the member of the plan signing that. We'll check on that and get back to the floor on second reading.
Further discussion, Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I submit to you that's not as bold as the language that we put in the state plan to say this is not a state obligation, and I don't see the requisite statement that this is not an obligation of the state. Folks, this is the easiest vote you'll ever make. You set up a plan to create a defined benefit that you don't even know what the liability is yet. I would like to see not simply the report of the Wyoming Retirement System. I would like to see the actuarial study that was conducted, who the actuary is and what the assumptions were, just to confirm to ourselves that this is a plan that's being set up. I would like the members of JAC to report to us with respect to the paid firemen accounts. We have A and B, and explain where they are actuarially, how much liability the state, that not the state, but how much, what's the deficit in those accounts that will have to be spent in order to meet what is anticipated to be the actuary studies. And when you, or the actual liability, and when you begin to look at those, you get the assessment of the amount of money that they're underfunded. Now, folks, so as I understand also, I'd like to ask about how this is funded. Now, in my case, I'm taxed in the community of Laramie. We're taxed, and part of that goes to a paid fireman, goes into a paid retirement account, and we pay, and that should be an actuarially sound program as you go along. Now, I believe in this instance, the communities that don't want to pay a tax for their volunteers are going to the state general fund. How they do that? They go to what is the insurance premiums paid by for insurance. Now, that money is a tax, and the tax goes to the general fund. And they said, let's intercept that those taxes before it reaches the general fund and carve them out to help pay for these folks' retirements. And while we're at that, let's do one for every all of us. So let's talk about, before we finish the discussion on this, is how much are you money are you intercepting from tax premiums that are going to the general fund to pay for these so that the folks receiving these, the communities receive these benefits, do not have to pay their own local taxes for firemen. So my questions as they stack up is, who is the actuary? Where is the actuarial study? What does it show that show there? Where is the language that says this is not a state obligation? And if the money runs out, we have no further obligation. And a statement by the firemen acknowledging that right now at the time they begin them. And let's talk about who's funding this program, where the money's coming from.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things. First of all, this plan has nothing to do with Fireman A or Fireman B. Fireman A, and I can tell you the actuarial sound of that, is pretty simple. It's not. In fact, it's about $75 to $80 million in the rear based on what the projections we had last year. And this body and the legislature tried to work out a compromise there, was not able to come to any kind of agreement. Fireman A is still out there, a huge unfunded liability that the language is there that the state doesn't feel it's obligated. They think we are obligated. They're totally independent. Fireman B also is totally independent of the Volunteer Fireman Fund. The Volunteer Fireman Fund is not a due-to-find benefit plan. It's been in effect for many, many years. We're not changing that. We're not going in any way, shape, or form changing that. What we're doing is we're taking the EMTs and rolling it into the Volunteer Fireman Fund. Part of how they pay for that, this is part of it, of course, and that comes from the fire premium tax. If you look at the original bill, you can see how that flows through in terms of the amount of money. It hits the general fund, and members of the Senate understand it does hit the general fund. And that's been at 50%, up to 50% for many, many, many years. And that has increased to do the combination of these, and the numbers are all there for you to follow. A lot of the communities in our state have special districts, and it's up to 3 mils, and those special districts are there to help the firemen with their equipment and other things. So the local taxpayers do pay into it. I would also echo to you the cost benefits to all of us in other areas that aren't fortunate enough to have paid firemen. And my colleague from Goshen County brought that up. I don't have any numbers to present to you about the impact of that, but if you think about it, there's 5,000 volunteer and paid firemen in our state that take care of 100% of the fires. 80% of that, or 4,000 volunteers, take care of that 80% of the fires for a heck of a lot more money, and you can reflect that in our particular insurance premiums on our fire for our protection of our homes. This really is a good deal. Now, to the actuarial soundness, I will be glad to provide the President a report that shows where the Volunteer Fireman Fund is now. It's doing fine, where it is if we do this, and how that's affected it. The actuarial study that's provided us by the retirement system that shows how we're in good shape. As to the language about what we do for the big plan, if you want some more tougher language, I thought we had that covered. We'll be glad to bring that in the second reading amendment. There was never any intent to put off the obligation of this onto the state. It's to allow these two plans to come together to solve a mutual problem to be beneficial to all of us.
Further discussion. Although the question hasn't been called, all those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 72, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries. House Bill 72 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is House Bill 67. Clerk, please read the title.
House Bill number 67, Wyoming Retirement System Amendment, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. It was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wassenberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 67, Wyoming Retirement System Amendments. For an explanation of the bill, I yield to the good senator from Sweetwater County.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate. House Bill 67, the Wyoming Retirement System Amendments. This bill is a cleanup bill for the Wyoming retirement system. This bill allows local elected officials to decline participation in the retirement system when first elected. It allows for firefighters in the Wyoming Army National Guard to be eligible to participate in the Air Guard firefighter plan. And, Mr. Chairman, amends calculations for past due employer contributions. Interest compounded annually at a rate determined by the board is charged on employer contributions not received by the 25th of the month due. It amends calculations for redeposit of calculations by members returning to covered employment. And, Mr. Chairman, that also the cost to reinstate service credit is specified to be the full actuarial cost less the amount of employer contributions previously made on behalf of the member. It updates archaic language in the retirement statutes. It references to specific actuarial assumptions is removed and replaced with the actuarial assumptions as determined by the board. Specifies that interest is compounded annually and set at a rate determined by the board, and removes references to a program coordinator for the deferred compensation program. It also, Mr. Chairman, repeals a provision requiring a written election for employees of the legislature to participate in a retirement system. And what this legislation does, it cleans up archaic language in the retirement statutes, makes it clear that interest charge is always compounded interest, and ensures that the retirement system does not sustain an actuarial loss when a member reinstates service. That's kind of what the bill is doing, Mr. Chairman. It's, as I said, the cleanup bill that was the Joint Appropriations Committee worked on, and there was an amendment put on by the other side. And so, starting through the bill, Mr. Chairman, the first changes are on page 1, line 10, just modifying redeposit payments. Mr. Chairman, then members of the Senate, on page 2, the definitions, you'll see several different definition updates throughout the bill where we better defined, as they stated before, some archaic language on page 2 and 3, defining what a member means in paragraph 7, and then on down to what a member does not mean, and adding the elected member of a county, municipal, or school district commission, council, or board, if And then it goes on to the commission, council, or board in which the elected member serves, participates in the system. The elected member is otherwise employed by an entity participating in the system. And the elected member elects in writing at the beginning of the member service, Mr. Chairman. And then on page four, it drops off the words electrical or regular. You'll see that throughout the bill, and just talks about interest and then the rate or rates, because we have found that on a lot of these actuarials that there are multiple rates depending upon the age required, ages of participants. So updating language there, adding the firefighter member. This is for the Air Guard on lines 11 through 14. And then on page 5, just some more cleanup language. The assumed rate of return is determined by the board, compounded annually. And then into page 6, where the service credits, the one-time, the member may elect to make a one-time purchase up to 5 years of service credits, and then guidelines provided for that. And then if elected to purchase service credits, shall pay into the account the single lump sum amount. And then, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, and then we get into page 8. That's the redeposit section, where an individual that comes back to employment in the state that's covered by the retirement system, then we outline how they can get back into the system, and that they have to an annual amount to the actuarial equivalent of the benefits to be derived from the redeposit, past employer contributions, the individual's attained age, and the benefit structure of the appropriate plan. And then, Mr. Chairman, and then other amendments that were taken care of otherwise were the striking out the 7 and into the 10 years following the date, just for a little more time, and testimony in committee was that was not an issue for the plan. And then on page 10, again, we have interest, again, striking out the word regular and adding the word rates, and then just updating the rest of conforming language on the remaining pages. As I stated, Mr. Chairman, this is just kind of a cleanup for language for the Wyoming retirement system, and ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion on House Bill 67. Further discussion. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 67, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. House Bill 67 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, privilege of the floor.
Please.
Could I please yield to Senator Geis so he could introduce his granddaughter?
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, if you give me the privilege, I can introduce my daughter, Cheryl. If you'd like. You can give her a warm welcome if you like.
Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
Senator Von Flattern, please.
Thank you. In the West Balcony, and so you didn't even need to sit down, in the West Balcony is the latest class of the Gillette Area Leadership Institute. Would you please welcome to the Senate?
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 70. Now, the clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill number 70, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, sponsored by the Select Water Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Geis. Senator Emmerich, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move House Bill 70 do pass. And you have a scoop sheet on your desk if you want to follow it, or you can follow the bill, however you want to do it. This is the construction side of it. So I'll just start with your scoop sheet. It has the tab that the project comes under, and it gives you the bill page and where it's at. And so we'll start with that. The first one is the Arapahoe Pipeline Tank, Fremont County. $1,926,920, 60% grant, 67% grant. And this project's been on the books for about 3 or 4 years, and now they finally got the other half of the money from the BIA, Indian Bureau of Indian Affairs. So that's where we're going to do the pipeline and the tank and finish up that project. The next one is the Cambridge tank in Weston County, $626,450. That's 67% grant, and they're coming up with the money somewhere else. That's for a pipeline and tank. That's what that one does there is they're tying into Newcastle water system. The next one is the Casper Zone 2, 2015 Natrona, $1,728,600. That's 67% grant pipeline, and they're furnishing the rest of the money. The next one is Indian Paintbrush Water Supply, Teton County, $616,400. And we finally found a well that we find a contract with. And what we're doing is having to put in a pipeline and a tank to get that water from that well over to that subdivision. The next one is Jamestown Rio Vista Water Supply in Sweetwater County. That's $4,288,000. That's over coming out of the Green River system. That's 67% grant, and they're coming up with their money. The next one will be KC Replacement Tank, Johnson County, $436,500. That's a 67% grant, and they're coming up the rest. The next one is Kemmer Diamondville Water System, Lincoln County, $1,587,900, and that's for a new tank. The next one is Lovell Tank, Zone 2 Improvements, Bighorn County, $2,401,950, and they'll get their water out of the Northwest Region Water System. The next one is Lower Norwood Rural Water, Washakie County, and that's $1,423,750. That's a 67% grant, and they're coming up with their money, and the money is appropriated, but they have to get a contract with the Ten Sleep before they can go ahead with that one. The next one is Newcastle, Weston County, $616,400, and that's another subdivision over there right next to Newcastle. And they need a pump and a pipeline. Next one is Pine Haven Well and Tank, that's in Crook County, $2,077,000. And that's over there on the east side of Keyhole Reservoir. There's a subdivision over there, and they're coming up with the rest of their money. Next one is Sheridan Leopard Street Pipeline, Sheridan, $2,211,000, 67% grant, and that's just a pipeline. The next one is Squaw Creek Water Supply, Teton County, $308,200, and that's another subdivision outside of Jackson there, and that's for a tank and controls.
The next one is Sweetwater Supply, Weston County. That's another subdivision over around Newcastle, $562,800. And that's 67% grant, and they're coming up with the rest of the money. And then on tab Q, page 14, it's water modification, Bighorn Laramie, Medicine Bow, and you need to see the footnote on it. It's $1,470,500. That's 100% state. This is the snowpack where the generates snow, my cloud seeding. And that money is in the account, but there's a footnote that none of that money can be spent without the approval of the Wyoming Water Development Commission and Select Water. The next one is the same thing, and that's for the Wind River Mountains, Fremont County sublet, $170,000. That's 25% grant, and that's where we're dealing there with the lower states like California, the lower Colorado states, California, Arizona, though Wyoming is going to pay 25% of it, and the other lower basin states come up with the rest of the money for that project. The next one is Wheatland Well Number 7, Platt County, $502,500, 67% grant, and that's a well, pumping, and pipeline. So that's all of account one. That subtotal that is $22,930,870. Now the next one we're going into is this is the rehab projects that we're coming up with next. And the first one is Bighorn Canal underway. That's in Washakie County. That's about 5 miles south of Worland, and it's where Lester Gulch runs underneath the canals, and we have to replace that system that goes over there. The next one is Casper Alcova Rehab, Natrona County, $187,600, 67% grant, lateral improvement, and that's that project that you cross on Highway 2026 as you go between Casper and Shoshone. The next one is Dullknife Reservoir Spill Rehab in Johnson County. That's $1,715,000. And then you need to see footnote 2, 67% grant. That's a spillway rehab, and that project will only go forth if we get general fund appropriation for that one. The next three projects are all the same thing. Goshen County, on Guernsey Dam, the Siphonway Rehab, Goshen County, $449,570, 67% grant. Spillway Rehab, there's two different canal companies come out of that, and that's also depending whether we get general fund money or not. The last one of that is Hills. This is Guernsey Spillway Rehab, Goshen County, $36,850, 67% grant. It's a spillway rehab, and that, if we get the general fund appropriation, they go for it. If they don't, why, they won't take place. The next one is Midvale Bull Lake Rehab in Fremont County, $2,653,200, and the footnote, that's 67% grant, and that's a spillway replacement. And what happens there is the federal government is going to do that, and they pay 85% of the project, but we have to have this money in place. But that's another one that has a footnote that the Wyoming Water Development Commission and Select Water have to okay it before the money can be spent. The next one is Savory Little Snake Battle Creek Diversions, Carbon County, $871,000. 67% grant, that's diversion structures. Sheridan, for it's a with a pipe or a tank, Sheridan, $2,140,000. And that's got a footnote on it, tank replacement. If that happens, that'll be comes out of general fund money if we get that one. The next one is Shoshone Rehab. That's in Park County, $290,000. We pay for the material, and they pay all the labor and all that lateral restructuring. Wheatland Rehab to Platte County, Shoshone, I gave the wrong number, that's $290,000. Platte County is $870,350 general, 67% grant, dam structure and siphons. The last one is the Wind River Irrigation Rehab, Fremont County, $1,442,100. That's a 67% grant ladder, and that depends on whether they get the money from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And that's the end of the rehabs. Now, Project 3's are storage, Sheridan supplemental storage level, 5,628,000, 67% grant, and then they're going to push the shares in Park Reservoir. And that Park Reservoir, when that was built, that was both for agriculture use and municipal use. So it's qualified for that if... And they'll buy, when shares come up, they're going to buy those shares for the town of Sheridan. And that's the end of that part. Now, the next one is small water projects, statewide. And these are reversions. And all the next three will... Or housekeeping, we have money left in that account, and we're going to a new system, so we have that extended out to 2017, and if that money's not used up, why, then that money all will revert back to Wyoming Water Development Commission and be put back in small water projects. That's what those are all about. Then the next one was... will be River and Water Supply, Fremont County, $2,772,000. That's general fund. With a 10% loan, tank, pipeline, pumping, and extended time. You can see that in the foot. It's increase the grant from $2,420,000. Increase the loan to is $360,000. Increase the appropriation to $2,270,000. 2-year time extension, so that'll take them over to 2017. Next one is Upton Well, Weston County. They just needed more time to get that completed. 1 year. Deaver Rehab is another one, 2-year extension. Ethedy Water Supply, 3-year extension. South Thermopolis, Hot Springs, $210,000, 67% grant and pipeline. And then Austin Well Canal Rehab, Uinta County, $600,000, 50% .9 grant. And then they have to get their money from the Salinity, from the Bureau of Reclamation, and that money will not come in. They're out of money right now, but they'll get a new appropriation in 2016, so that project then will go on, be able to go on forth. Phase project with Salinity Control, I talked about Eden Valley, Farson Rehab, Phase Sweetwater County, $2 million. $132,500, lateral reconstruction, and that depends on whether we get the money from the general fund or not. The next one is Riverton Valley Rehab, and they just need an extension for that one. Small water development statewide, $5 million, or $500,000, 50% grant pipe wells and dams. increase the grant $500,000 for the appropriation to the account of small waters. And the next one is small water project 2014 statewide, $400,000, 50% grant, pipeline wells and dams. And the total of this whole budget is $65,952,963. So that's it. If you have any questions, I have the big book there. Every one of the Joint Ag Committee has a book like that, so you can go to them and ask any question you want about any project. Thank you.
Senator Geis, I think it's great that on Take Your Granddaughter to Work Day, she sees you really earn your pay.
Maybe.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering, I missed it in the presentation of the bill where the section was for waterboarding the legislature.
Senator Hicks, it's in a footnote. You need to read more carefully. You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 70, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 70 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 41. Clerk, please read the title.
House Bill number 41, Barber Ring License Requirements, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision. Report back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 41. And for an explanation of this fine little House bill, I yield to the Senator with the fabulous haircut from Goshen County.
Barbers, yes. Let me pull that baby out. Just a second. We got it right here. Okay, Mr. Chairman, what we do here is that we have the cosmetology board and we got the barber board here, and what we're doing is defining an instructor, because the problem is that if you're going to get instructed in barbery, from the Barbary Coast, from the barbaric Barbaries, you have to go to Colorado, or we had testimony that one guy went clear down to Florida. So what we're doing is that we're providing for an instructor, which means a person's licensed to teach barbering in any other practice in the school of barbering as defined by this act by rules. And that goes into the other part of the bill where you used to have 750 hours of training at an approved barber school or college, but we changed that to as set forth by the board of barbery again, and that's by rules and regulations. And the testimony was is that the 750 is overkill. That the only thing that they actually learn how to do versus cosmetology is shaving. So they thought 150 hours of shaving in and about that is about what other schools use for that particular skill set to be learned is probably appropriate, but they'll make that decision based on rules, and this actually helps out both the cosmetologists and the barbers, because you'll have a barbery school and cosmetologists who want to be able to shave somebody, and I'm sure there's folks around here that would just love to have that ability to have their cosmetologist give them a good clean razor cut. You know, in a short time, Mr. Chairman, that may be the case. And I can see some smiles on some of the faces of the folks here on the floor. So I think there's a possibility that we really should move this bill forward, because it is a good little bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 41, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 41 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 3. Clerk will please read the bill.
22
would be the next, Mr. Chairman. Unless there's a change.
No, well, it's 22 on the board.
What did they say is the next one?
The next bill is 22. House Bill 22.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 22. Clerk, will please read the bill.
House Bill number 22, Disabled Veteran License Plates, sponsored by the Transportation Committee.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
I've got to read this.
Oh, excuse me.
It was referred to Committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Meyer, Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report, it do so with a do pass motion on House Bill 22, Disabled Veterans License Plates. Mr. Chairman, what we did on this is that there's a little confusion about the initial application or renewal applications, and so what we did is go into the statute there on 31.2.215 on line 14 and 15 of this bill, and we belayed that confusion by being specific that it was someone who had a service disability, service-connected disability of 50% or more at the initial application or when you renewed your license on the renewal application. We also went in, and there was a fellow over by Rock Springs that said, you know, I don't have a motor vehicle. I've got a motorcycle. And in our statutes, the motorcycle was not necessarily a motor vehicle. Those are things with four wheels, Mr. Chairman. And so what we did is that there's some discussion also about multi-purpose vehicles, and that's your little four-wheelers that you can go off-road or have them licensed. So what this does is that it makes it clear that it's also for motorcycles and multi-purpose vehicles. It does strike what is not authorized expressly, but as statute construction goes, if it isn't authorized, it's prohibited because it's not on the list. So we took those ones that were on a do not license list and just struck them and just included the ones that were on the license list. And that's a car, pickup truck, motorcycle, and multi-purpose vehicle. And the way this is structured is that the question was asked to the department is whether or not they could have multiple license plates. And the answer to that is no, because they're approved by the VA administration, and they're only allowed one license plate. So, Mr. Chairman, with that explanation of the bill and the questions that were asked and answered, I would stand for questions or call for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just curious what it looks like. I'm not familiar with it. I know we have all the veterans' licenses and stuff. Does it just look like a Wyoming license plate with some sticker on it? Or is this an actual license plate that will have like a disabled vet or something? I really don't know.
Mr. Chairman, the problem we were having with this rule was that the veteran wanted to have more than one veteran's disabled plate. He wanted to have it on his pickup, and his motorcycle, not just one or the other. And as I heard the senator from Goshen County say that maybe he still could only do it for one, I thought this language cleared it up so he could have it for any vehicle or all vehicles.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd be interested in further readings of this bill for members of the body to get a list of just how many license plates and different license plates there are. And I believe the military-related license plates, you've got the Purple Heart POWs, you've got a separate license plate for every branch of the government if you're a veteran. You've got Pearl Harbor Survivor license plates, which, my understanding, and by the rule of this body a few years back, it now extends to their survivors, even though they're not Pearl Harbor survivors, but they can still have the license plate. The question I have about this particular, I guess it's that important to have it on multiple vehicles that you're a disabled veteran. Is it a disabled plate? So can they, with this plate, can they park in disabled parking spots? Is that the purpose of this plate, or is it just to say that you were disabled but you didn't win a Purple Heart? I'm trying to understand the purpose of this plate and why it's needed on every vehicle. And can non-disabled veterans, members of the family, drive this car that has disabled plates on it? Are we running into a problem of stolen valor here?
Mr. Majority Leader. Senator Meyer.
Thank you. I'll try to answer some of those questions. One, the reason for this plate is that they get it at, I think it's free. And so that's why you don't have multiple plates, because we're not going to give four different plates for absolutely nothing, and there is a cost. The state reimburses the local government, for that cost. So it isn't an unfunded mandate, but the disabled veteran does get it for, nothing. So there you have that. That's why we don't have multiple bites at the apple, so to speak. And it's just a little DV on the license plate. And no, it doesn't entitle you to a free parking pass with a placard. So I think those were the questions, and we can get that information. I think we've had that information. The department has given it to us as far as all the different special types of plates and all the different things that go with them. So we can ask the department for that, and we'll give it to you and hand it out on second reading.
Further discussion, Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a memory and multiple memories of seeing DV plates, disabled veteran plates. So I'm trying to figure out what this bill does.
Senator Johnson, further discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this does is tighten down on them. It doesn't expand them. It tightens down on them. One way is that people were getting these plates, heading out of state, living out of state, and having free license plates somewhere else. Now their address of record will be checked by the Department of Transportation and by the Veterans Commission to make sure that they're not playing those games. And if they are, they'll just pull the plates and they won't renew them. Second of all, it was an expansion. We have veterans whose only mode of transportation is motorcycles, and they'd sure like to get one for their motorcycle. And okay, you earned it, you get it. There is no relationship between this and the handicap that hang on your rearview mirror. The handicap that hang on your rearview mirror has to come from a physician to YDOT. That's who okays them, and that's when YDOT issues them. When my wife broke her leg, we got the red one because that wasn't a permanent handicap. But until she got the casts off and the
everything else done, it saved her life. The blue is the permanent one. And the plate, let me go back to the plate. The plate, you have to have a 50% Veterans Administration disability. 50%. And you have to prove that to the Veterans Commission. They're the ones that say, yep, they have it. And then they tell WIDOT and they tell the county treasurers that it's okay. They approve it. So, again, it's tightening down and it's allowing motorcyclists, if they want their one on their motorcycle, they can have it. But that's all they can have is their one.
Further discussion? Senator Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to figure out, it just triggered my thinking on this. They had to be a resident or this tightened it down. So I was trying to quickly read the statutes, and I remember we did tighten it up before. So they would be a veteran, and they'd be living in Georgia now and retired, and then they'd send in for a free plate every year. And finally, we tightened that up so veterans couldn't have... they had to be a resident. So I'm trying to think of where this particular area says you have to be a resident because I can't find it in the section. So I think anybody for the rest of your life can get a free Wyoming license plate no matter where you live. Am I reading that correctly?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's what we tightened up because the original language read, who is a resident at the time of application. Well, that was construed to be an initial application, and once you were under the tent and in the tent, then you were good. So what we did is that we said, okay, you got to be a resident at the time of initial application or a resident at renewal application. So that's where we tightened it up. So, like, if you're a snowbird and you got a residency someplace else, and you're not actually a Wyoming resident anymore, then you don't get the free license plate. So, and they check on the residency to make sure that that's the way it is. So that's the one thing. And then they also check on and make sure that you only can license one vehicle. And, of course, these folks will probably license the most expensive vehicle. But there are some folks, as the good senator from Cheyenne indicated, is that maybe they've only got a four-wheeler or maybe they only have a motorcycle. And previously, that was not something you could license.
Further discussion, yeah. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I was looking through the statute also. I don't see where it's free. I think what's free is the sticker, but they're paying for the license plate. But I would have to have somebody show me where that statute says it's free. I think it does say the sticker's free. One sticker is free. And, you know, it's too much probably to have more than one.
Senator Rothfuss, further discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sort of shocked I'm standing on this, but as I look on page 1 and look at the bottom 14, 15 lines and look at the consider the explanation that we were given by the friend from the eastern part of the state. With the or clause presence, that doesn't tighten it up. That always loosens it. So what we see here is, and who is a resident at the time of initial application or renewal application, which means that if either of those is true, then you're fine. So you could apply at the initial application, be a resident. The or clause is satisfied for any future applications. So I know what the intent was, but I don't think the language accomplishes the intent.
Further discussion, Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I read that on page 1 of the bill, lines 14 and 15, and who is a resident at the time of initial application or renewal application, that means both. And if we need to do some wordsmithing, we can put in at the time of initial application as well as or something like that, really to tighten it down so that there's no doubt in anybody's mind.
Further discussion?
Questions?
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 22, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 22 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 3. Clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill Number 3, Department of Insurance Fine Schedules, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 3, and I'd ask that we yield to the Senator Scott.
To the Senator Scott.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3 is a joint interim bill. It updates the civil penalties that can be charged for violation of the insurance code. Basically, it's an update for inflation. The information I have is that last update was in 1982. There was a 2005 legislation in this area, but that what that did was put the fines to the common school fund the way it should be. There was concern in the joint interim that when the department brought this to us, that the fines weren't large enough to deter some of the larger entities in this area from bad behavior. And there was concern then, and mentioned again in committee this morning, that if there was a national class action, which is somewhat sometimes how they do it, against one of these companies for bad practices, our share might be cut down if what we got depended in part on the kind of fines that were being charged. And then, Mr. Chairman, there's a very creative approach. You'll see it in the bill on page 3, where if you get somebody that's done something and it's pretty minor, but they do need a correction, you can charge them up to $500 for the cost of investigation administration of any proceedings. That's less than it'll actually cost. The intent there is to have a penalty that is big enough to get their attention, but not big enough to have to be reported to the NAIC and put in the various national databases, so it doesn't carry on. And, Mr. Chairman, there is a problem in insurance. It's very important that the paperwork be done properly, so if there's a dispute as to when the policy went into effect or something like that, that it's very clear from the records. And people being people, they get sloppy about the paperwork, and it's a concern. So they were looking for a lesser sanction to get an agent who's otherwise perfectly good and doing a good job to quit being sloppy about their paperwork. This was the basic concern. I think it's quite creative. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer questions in the bill and urge the Senate to adopt it.
Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 3 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 40.
House Bill Number 40, Insurance Adjusters Portable Electronic Devices, sponsored by the Corporations Committee.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Excuse me.
It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye. Senators Case, Hicks, Myers, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 40, Insurance Adjusters, Portable Electronic Devices. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
House Bill 40, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 20.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee amendment to House Bill 40, and for an explanation of this bill and the amendment, I would yield to Senator Pappas, and I'm going to take an entire powder for the day.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This also was a joint interim bill. This bill seeks a licensure exemption for persons collecting or distributing insurance claim information utilizing an automated claims adjudication system for portable electronic devices. And before I get into the bill, I just want to give you just a little bit of background. In 2013, the legislature, through Senate File 5 at the time, created a new statute, Title 26-9-34, creating a limited line licensing process in the Wyoming Insurance Code. That legislation included a section for portable electronic devices. So this legislation is basically just a follow-up to that legislation. This legislation provides consistency with 31 other states that have adopted the same exemption. And I might note that only 34 states actually license adjusters, or required licensure. 16 states do not. So out of the 34, 31 have passed this exemption, and so we're just going to be the 32nd. The insurance offered is straightforward. You've probably all used it. When you lose an electronic device like your phone, there are insurances that are sold through the providers of your cell phone coverage that offer insurance. And so this process is for lost, stolen, or broken portable electronic devices. And unlike other types of insurance claims that require a very complex system of determining a claim's outcome, these claims are very simple. And you've all probably made those claims. There's little or no calculation to the value of the portable device. That's all set. Or to the extent of the loss. It's either broken, lost, or it's stolen. There are customer service representatives, they're called CSRs, that input this data. When you call them on the phone, they input this data into what's called an automated claims adjudication system. And so what we're looking at is the exemption for those folks. It's appropriate to have licensed adjusters supervising these CSRs, and this bill will allow, the legislation will propose a 25-to-1 ratio so that not more than 25 non-licensed CSRs are under the supervision of a licensed adjuster or agent. Now, this is a typical standard. The number was has been used by many states. So that's what we are going, what you'll see in the bill. So let me just turn quickly to the bill. So on page one, basically it's just at the bottom of the page, this section shall not apply to an individual who, and if you flip the page, Romanet 1, collects claim information from or furnishes claim information to insureds or claimants for portable electronic devices, device insurance claims. Romanet 2, conducts portable electronic device insurance claim data entry, including entering data into automated claims adjudication systems. And Romanet 3, is supervised by a licensed adjuster or licensed agent who is exempt from licensure. And it also goes on to say that that an agent or adjuster shall not supervise more than 25 of these folks, these customer service representatives. And also in the bill, going on line 18, we do have a definition of the automated claims adjudication system, which means a pre-programmed computer system which is designated for the collection, data entry, calculation, and final resolution of portable electronic device insurance claims. Now, I'd like to talk about amendment, the standing committee amendment. It's to change some language in this paragraph. Basically, on line 20, we're changing the word final to initial, because if you enter your information into the automated system, and for some reason there is a problem with it, you know, you have not paid your premiums or you're outside the time limit of the policy, then what it does is it gets uploaded or gets elevated to a real live adjuster. And so it's not the final resolution. The final resolution could be a higher higher process. So we're removing final and putting initial. And then on line 21, we're putting a period after claims and striking the balance of 21, line 22, and on page 3, lines 1 and 2. Basically, we're taking out the utilization by the adjuster. It really didn't fit in the definition of the automated system. Then on page 3, line 4, we have another definition of the portable electronic device insurance claim. It means a claim filed by an insured or claimant to receive benefits under a portable electronic device insurance contract for an electronic device that is and its accessories that are portable in nature and which must be easily carried or conveyed by hand. Just to further tighten up what we mean by portable electronic device. With that, I would urge your favorable consideration of the amendment and of the bill. I stand for questions.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Perkins.
I had a question on just interested in the logic behind replacing final with initial.
Your mic is on, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, just a question on the amendment. We're replacing the word final with the word initial, which as I interpret the word initial, that anticipates that there would be something else, something more. But it sounds like it may or may not be. It sounds like you could. So I'm just wondering if that. Anyway, I'm just interested why it's initial and why it's not just resolution.
Further discussion, Senator Pappas on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, that's a very good point, and actually we did discuss in committee that possibly the word final should just be removed and no word put there. I believe industry actually didn't want a word there at all, just the word final removed. You know, we certainly could divide this amendment and not provide the word initial.
Further discussion on the amendment, Senator Meyer.
Thank you. And a little more to that point is that in many cases it could be the final if there was a resolution that was in favor of the customer. But in an area where there's a disputed settlement as to the insurance, and whether it attached or didn't attach for a various number of reasons, then it would be an initial. So we didn't want to say that in statute that it was the final, because if it was determined it was the final, then folks that had the insurance may believe that they wouldn't have any appeal process. But there is an appeal process that the industry representative spoke about briefly, and so that's why the word final had to come out, because in about 3-4% of the claims there's a likelihood that there could be an appeal, and so we didn't want to basically tell those people that this was the final one and you didn't have any mechanism to move forward with any type of an appeal. So that's why we said it was the initial step. And like I said, 96-97% of the times it would be the final, but there are those times when we had to look at that and make provisions for it.
We're in Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 40. Further discussion? Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 40, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment passes. We're now back on the bill. Further discussion. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 40, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 40 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 23. Clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill number 23, Next Generation Science Standards 2, sponsored by Representative Patton. It was referred to Committee number 4, Education, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Anderson, 02, Coe, Dockstader, Pappas, and Rothfuss, Senator Co-Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 23, Next Generation Science Standards 2, and I yield to the floor manager, Senator Anderson.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a pretty short bill. It won't take long to go through the bill. So I'll simply say that House Bill 23, having to do with the Next Generation Science Standards, high profile, kind of a controversial subject. The bill is really straightforward in what it does, and I'll explain why I opted to be a co-sponsor on the bill. The act relates to the Next Generation Science Standards, allowing the state board, I'll repeat, to expend the funds in consideration of the Next Generation Standards and adoption of uniform student content and performance standards and providing for the effective date. It does it simply by, as in Section 1 says, by repealing footnote 3 in the past budget. Mr. Chairman, it's not the purpose of this bill to dictate what the standards should be, whether they should be improved, or any discussion in regard to the construction of the standards. The bill, as it is, and my intention, is purely about process, allowing the process of determining what the state standards in science in Wyoming should be, and that should be given to where the responsibility and the right has been assigned, and that's back to the State Board of Education. Beyond that, then, there can be public comment, there can be debate. I don't really care in regard to that as long as the process is served. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would say it does allow the State Board of Education to proceed in developing the up-to-date standards, and it also continues to allow the 48 school districts to determine their curriculum as how to achieve those. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would either pause for questions or defer back to Senator Rothfuss, who might have further comment in regard to the bill.
House Bill 23, further discussion.
Question.
The question having been called for, all those in favor of Senator Rothfuss's motion that when the Committee of the Whole does rise, it shall do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 23, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 23 has passed. We are now, has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 19. Clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill number 19, Registered Investment Advisors, sponsored by the Capital Financing Committee. It was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, And Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with due pass recommendation on House Bill 19, Registered Investment Advisors, and yield the floor to the good senator from Natrona County.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Chairman. Bring this as Vice Chairman of the Select Committee on Capital Financing and Investments. All we're doing here in 94715 is curing is first of two cleanup bills, this one and the next one. What this bill does is under 94715, this is where the after the amendment that allowed investments in securities was passed a number of years ago, that we amended this so that our treasurer or his designee was required to be registered in the Investment Advisors Act of 1940, which is a national statute that subjects and regulates investment advisors across the country. In addition to that, at that time, what may have been practiced that allow banks as potential designees who are defined in the act to also invest. That is no longer the practice. The treasurer, his designee, our chief investment officer, are registered investment advisors. They invest that money. In various places. Some of it's self-managed. Some of that is then designated also to be invested by various investment advisors. So what this bill does is remove the what was now archaic language with respect to the bank, and makes clear that state treasurer as your designee must be registered investment advisors under the Investment Advisors Act 1940 as it is amended. That's the intent of the bill. I don't think it's anything nefarious, but simply cleanup and maintenance language to conform with current practice. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
House Bill 19, further discussion. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 19, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 19 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 20. Clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill Number 20, Clarification of Duties of Treasurer's Office, sponsored by the Capital Financing Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so, the due pass recommendation on House Bill 20, clarification of duties of the Treasurer's Office, and once again yield to the good Senator from Natrona County.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is not as long or complicated as long, obviously, but it's not as complicated as it may appear. What this was also part of the interim work of the Select Committee on Capital Financing and Investments. Mr. Chairman, what happened is we worked with the Treasurer, went through and identified in various statutes and took language that's there and conformed it to current practice and what goes on. So what you see in a number of these things where funds or other things may have been actually required to be deposited with the treasurer or paid by the treasurer or dispersed by the treasurer. In fact, many of those things, whether they're grants or other things like that, come through and they're actually deposited directly into specific accounts, and then the receipt and the management and the receipt and the acknowledgement of that is indeed by the treasurer's office. So the treasurer's office is keeping track of it, but nevertheless is an attempt to conform with consistent or current practice. An example of that, when you look at the first one on page 2, with the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, there are all funds received are from the federal government for vocational rehabilitation are actually deposited with the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation and used by them. However, there is, and then you see the language at the ends, there is also submitted, the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation is then required to submit receipt and acknowledgement to the state treasurer, who then keeps track and notifies and keeps track of that money under his, and so he complies with his statutory duties. And so as you go through the bill, that's exactly what you see in various places. We look at each of those, go back and conform them to current practice, and you'll see sometimes that they're paid, but oftentimes you'll see very directly that once it goes, that there is with receipt and acknowledgement submitted to the state treasurer. So you see that again on page 4, see it on page 5, and so through the bill. That's basically kind of the review is through particular conforming language and noting in some cases correcting archaic language, but in each case where a depositor, someone other than the state treasurer, received an acknowledgement or then forwarded to the state treasurer so he can fulfill his statutory duty. With that explanation, I ask that you vote favorably or look favorably on this bill and would stand for questions.
Bill 20, further discussion. Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report and to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 20, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. House Bill 20 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 13. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill Number 13, State Parks Use of Fees, sponsored by the Travel Committee. Should have one on it, shouldn't it? It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises and reports that do so with the recommendation that House Bill 13 engrossed State Parks Use of Fees do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, Mr. Chairman, and I ask to yield to Senator Barnard for an explanation of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I rise to present to you House Bill 13, State Parks Use of Fees. This is a problem that's looking for a solution, and I think we can find a solution with the passage of this bill. Right now, there is a capital fund that is used by the fees that are generated on page 2. If you look at page 2 of the bill, it talks about all of the sites in the state that generate fees. These fees go into a capital construction account. This capital construction account can only be used for major maintenance and capital construction. The daily operations and maintenance has to come from the general fund. The problem is, over the years with inflation and two budget cuts, that these operations and maintenance funds have gone down to the point that we're reaching a pivotal point with the parks to where they're not able to keep up their facilities. This is important because our park system is a major part of our tourist industry. Our tourist industry is the number two agency that gains income for our state. The state parks have the highest ratio of money. When you bring in a dollar to the state parks, it generates $9 in economic impact. Last year, the state parks did over $80 million in economic impact. They generated $3.5 million in state and local taxes. Creates 1,000 jobs, and last year it created $25 million in wages and salaries throughout the state. It generated $50 million in new visitor dollars back to the state. So this state parks is integral to our tourist trade, which brings us to the bill. If you turn to page 3, on paragraph line 9, page 3, line, well, let's just go to line 8, 9, 8. It starts, the remaining funds collected from the amenities or from the fees from these different places will be authorized by paragraph 5 of this subsection at the end of the fiscal year, may be deposited in, cross out, capital construction, and go to the state parks account. So the money that's in the capital construction account will be bled out, and all the money that comes in from these fees will now go into the state parks fund. So if you look at page 3 on page line number 19, it says the funds received by the department from the sale of permits shall be deposited, strike capital construction again, and put into an account within the special revenue fund hereby created as a state parks account. If you flip over there and go to page 4, on line 3, it says, interest on funds in this account shall accrue to the amount. Not more than 25% of the funds in this account in any fiscal year may be also expended for general operations and maintenance of outdoor recreation areas and facilities. So this is a major shift, members of the Senate. It'll be able to put operations and maintenance money from this fund into the department to manage these areas. If we do this, this will only bring us back to 2009 levels. This isn't going to completely correct the problem, and it's still only going to make us go back to 2009 levels of funding. With that, I think it's an easy bill. We would really ask you for your help. It's really going to make a big difference to the state parks. Thank you.
Further discussion on House Bill 13, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, I think we need to pay a lot of attention to this particular bill. And I'll talk about a little bit of the time that I was on appropriations. There was not one year that went by that the park did not come in and ask for more capital construction funding. Not one year. They always had more capital construction requirements in their minds than what this account would take care of. And now what are we doing in this? Previously, all of the amount of money that came into this account was approved by the legislature. I turned to page 4, the back of the bill. It's not the case anymore. And we were only using this account for construction projects, major maintenance, site interpretation, signage, and displays approved by the legislature. Now there's part of this that's not approved by the legislature, and guess what part, big part that is? Expended for general operations. Boys, that's wages. They can give anybody a raise without the approval of their legislature. That's what that says. That's what it says. General operations. They can go out and buy pickup trucks without the approval of the legislature. They can buy motorboats without the approval of the legislature. General operations. And maintenance of outdoor recreation areas and facilities. General operations is, it's everything. There's no restriction when you do general operations. And that's 25% of the interest that comes in on this account. Now, I don't know how much that is. I can't tell you, you know, but it's enough to be significant or they wouldn't have gone after it. And I can tell you that every year that I was on appropriations, they always wanted their slush fund. And right here in this bill, they got it. Now, we're tight. There's no doubt about it that we're tight in this budget and the next budget and several subsequent budgets. Now, if you want the agency to have their own slush fund so they have the flexibility, well, this is it. Go ahead and give it to them, walk out the door, and feel good about it. But the fact is that they're going to be coming in and asking for more and more and more money for construction. And they can probably justify it, and a lot of that's going to be voted for. But this part over here on page 4, nobody votes for that.
House Bill 13, further discussion. Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, in order to answer some of the things that have been brought forward here, first of all, the funds that are go into this account are all fees that are collected by the Parks Department at their various facilities. These are not funds that come out of any general fund or anything that we have here. They're continuously appropriated to the park system here in the state. And they're not, like I say, general fund monies that we have here. They're already continuously appropriated. All they're doing is taking a part of this, a 25% of this, to move it into operations and maintenance. It's not the entire amount. It's just a very small amount of that. And every project that the state parks ever does any capital project has to be approved by this legislature. None of these funds are expended outside of that realm. That's true that this would be used for maintenance, trying to keep up the roads. Don't, if you've been to some of the parks lately, you've seen the problems that they had there keeping the maintenance up. So that's a part of this thing. This is not funds. These are funds that have been in existence for several years, and this mechanism has already been there. And it's not general fund money. These are funds that they collect for fees from the various parks in the state, and that's the way this works.
Further discussion on House Bill 13.
Question.
President Nicholas.
No. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the issue here isn't whether or not the state park needs the funds. The issue is, and always will be, is the receipt of these monies collected, accounted for, and reported? And when we went out and increased fees, what did you increase them for? These fees were largely increased by folks to go out and make improvements at your parks. And now, after having increased the fees for park improvements, the service now comes and says, well, you know, we don't like this whole process of having to go to the legislature and ask for operating funds. We would prefer to be able to use the funds that we promised we'd use to make improvements, road improvements, and capitals. We'd like to use that for operational dollars and not have to go to the legislature and explain our needs. So, you know, I concur with our colleague over near one of our big parks. The dollars were originally when we there was a reason why we increased fees. People were prepared to pay them for amenities. But when they paid those fees and when we charged them, they didn't think they were paying for a bunch of employees to be over there and watching the doors and throwing hamburgers. These were for improvements to your parks. Things that people enjoy. For the employees, they need to go through the budget process like everyone else.
Senator Anderson.
Yes, just quickly, you know, I won't repeat all of the park facilities that I have in my district, but it does create a lot of concern within my constituents, and I get pleas for help in that effort and pleas for funding. Without going on, I'll simply say the president makes a good case.
Further discussion, yeah. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, if you look on this bill, on page 3, lines 13 through 17, you will see what it says. It says here, revenues and expenditures under paragraph 14 of this subsection and this paragraph for each of the immediately preceding two fiscal years shall be reported within the department's biannual budget requests submitted under statute so-and-so-and-so. So they have to be accountable. They're accountable because they have to report it. They have to include it as part of their biannual budget. So they do report the expenditures and the revenues in that fashion.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. Question for the proponents of the bill. If this bill should get the second reading, why would it be bad to put in a provision that the expenditures out of this account shall be as authorized in the biennial budget bill or otherwise by the legislature so that we have the regular look at it? I can see some virtue in saying you got to maintain what you've got before you go building a lot of new things, and maybe that's appropriate. But it would seem to me that handling that through the normal biennial budget process like any other state agency would be a good idea.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, over the past years, and when I've been in the TRW committee, they have tried to get extra money. They have had funding models for the past four biennium. They've had vehicle registration, trust funds, lottery funds, sin taxes, real estate transfer fees, corporate sponsorship, facilities, amenities, ATM donations, and none of these things have raised any money. They are at a point because of inflation and the budget cut they have, that they are going to have to cut services and they're going to have to cut the quality of these state parks. As I said before, these are important to our tourism industry. I applaud the senator from Natrona County. I think if we have get a second reading, we can make an amendment there that these funds that are used will and can be made accountable to the legislature and make a report of what happens. I'm sure that can happen. And in this bill, it doesn't say that we're going to take a full 25%. It says up to 25%. So that's not a guarantee we're going to take that money every single year. Like I said, this is a pivotal idea for this, for their organization. Still ask for your support.
House Bill 13, further discussion. Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back when I served on this committee, it was a concern to me that we had proposals come in front of us all the time, fund this, fund that, and the good senator from Uinta County just noted several of them. I nicknamed them bake sale bills. So we're going to try to fund them here for a while and fund them there for a while. And so it was our hope that they could find a way to substantiate and get a regular flow of funding going along. And so I'd stand in support. It doesn't sound like it's very popular, and I'd stand in support of this bill. Let's get it forward.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you,
Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the problem I'm having with the bill, and it gets into the bottom of page 3, where this was a capital construction account before. And clearly that any funds expended from those revenues coming in from the fees would be approved by the legislature on the top of page 4. So clearly that happened. However, we go further on to say now that they may expend it for general operations and maintenance. So are the sponsors of this, and are they intending for this to be not funded or approved by the legislature? This language is very vague. Or are they intending for this 25% shall be approved and appropriated by the legislature? And I think that's a real important part. If it's not to be approved and appropriated by the legislature, then this is a bad bill. If it is, then maybe we need some clarification.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, you begin at page 3, lines 4. Funds collected from the amenities fee. So there was an amenity fee, so that was the way these funds were sold on it. It's a tax for people using the facilities. There are amenities fees. And historically, they were applied to capital construction. We said you can use those throughout the year, and you don't need a prior specific authorization because on page 3, you have a continuous appropriation. Now, we don't like continuous appropriations. But in this instance, we said, look, if you collect these amenities fees, you can use them that summer without having to come talk to us. But you use them for capital facilities because that was the idea. Now, what they're saying is let's take those amenities fees that were to be paid for the capital construction, and it also allowed them some discretion with respect to utilities and things that people would enjoy, that those funds would come and now that they're going to be available for continuous appropriation, and you simply report to us after the fact. Folks, there is no agency out there that believes that they have enough employees. If you believe that, sit on the Appropriations Committee for a year or two. Every agency believes that they're overworked and underpaid, and this is no different. And part of what happens is that they work on their standing committees and they say, look, it's going in front of the Appropriations Committee's tough. We have to explain things and we have to justify, and they'd say no. We want you, our standing committee, to help us find a way to go around the Appropriations Committee. These bills this is not the way the funding was promised. That's not the reason the way the tax was there. And you bet, it's hard. And there's nothing unique about this agency that's different from any other agency. They just happen to be this committee's oversight agency, and so it's the only agency you hear from. But if you were on minerals hearing from DEQ, you would hear the same thing. If you were on judiciary and you hear from corrections, you hear the same thing. And it's not your job to construct ways, the committee's job to construct ways to bypass appropriations and have to come in and measure your needs against everybody else in state government. Their needs get measured every year. When they come and ask for new employees, their needs get measured against everyone else. And guess what? You look at everybody and you say, we're not going to increase the number of employees. And what we see over and over again is oversight committees saying, yeah, you know, it's tough. You got to go to appropriations, and they say no. So let's find a way to go around them. And let's find a way to get you money for operations. Operational dollars come through the general fund. And it is tough. It's supposed to be tough. It should be hard to get in and spend taxpayer money to hire people and wages. It shouldn't be easy. On and against the bill.
Senator Burns. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on for the bill. The fees, both amenities fees and entry fees, were increased about 6 years ago, and the idea was for capital construction and major maintenance because we needed those things at the time. But needs change on the part of these agencies. We're not giving up control of anything. This is not like the transportation department or something like that where you don't know where the money's necessarily going, and they tell you when they feel like it a couple of years later. They come back before the Appropriations Committee every year, and the amount of money we're talking about is on the entry fees and amenity fees totals about $2 million per year. Now, what they're talking about is up to $500,000 being switched over to O&M from capital construction and major maintenance. Why? Because they need it in the past 6 years. They've had their budget cut over $1 million. They need that for operations and maintenance at this point. If they go out and decide they're going to go out and buy a houseboat for themselves or something like that that has been alluded to, we can always come back and thump them. Come next budget session, we find out how much they spent, and we take it off on the other thing. On the other end, the operations and maintenance right now is about $1.6 million a year. $1.65 million a year. This opens up another account for them to be able to ask for the money from. Everybody competes for general fund money, and we have a number of very important causes in our budget. And frankly, state parks gets short end of the stick quite often. I understand that. They understand that. But what they're doing is we're opening up another account for them to be able to take operational money from. Now, if there's a concern that there isn't enough oversight, let's go to the second reading, and those who are concerned about that can bring an amendment to worry about that. But this is a common sense bill. So let's let them be able to go into this other fund to get the money. This is where they need the money, not major maintenance and capital construction. The other aspect of it is anytime any of us pay entry fee into anything, state park, national park, anything like that, the normal expectation is that some of the money that we're paying to get into there is going to be used to support the place. That's just a natural assumption. Anybody who's not savvy to the way that we do things, that's going to be the natural belief they have. Well, let's fulfill their belief. Let's put truth in their belief. On and for the bill. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to draw everyone's attention to pages 2 from lines 4, clear down through lines 19, and just point out that my district over on the west side of the state is taking one for the team, and we're not in line for any of this money. You won't see our community in here. We do, in all seriousness, though, members of the Senate, tourism is important to our economy. not just for our residents or for our visitors, but also for our residents. And to maintain and take care of these facilities, it's reasonable. They expect it to be updated and freshened from time to time. And one of the things I learned years ago in my prior elected office was that it's easy to get the community behind passing a large capital project. The challenge is on the maintenance. The challenge is taking care of it and keeping it so that it gives great service to the community. This is just a mechanism to help provide that ability to maintain, take care of the products that we quite often get excited about building, but the other side of that is keeping the money there to maintain them. Let's go ahead and move this forward to the second reading, see if we can improve the bill before we just end it today.
Further discussion, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, it is about tourism, and it's about enjoying your parks, and it is about allocation. But what they haven't brought to you is every year we're brought by, while I was on JAC, we received every year a deferred maintenance list. Nobody's presented that this year. The last time that I saw that list, it was north of $28 to $30 million. And that's just the identified major maintenance issues. These are things like whether the toilets work, whether there are, these are existing facilities. And these fees were intended for them to address the quality of those facilities that you actually experience. Now what they're saying is we want to move that into employees, operations. But that request belongs in the general fund. And to suggest that that this is more important to them, to the department, I'm sure it is. I'm sure they all would like to hire more people to come out and help them. That's just the nature of government. But I haven't heard a statement about the deferred maintenance that exists and the purpose for which these funds were raised in the first place and earmarked for this, for capital construction. And any of you that, all of us go out and we look at the parks and you can see it, and you can see deferred maintenance needs when you go there. And frankly, I can go in the summer and go places and I can see employees doing things. I'm like, really? What are we paying that for? These funds were, in fact, built, they were put on as amenities fees. They were capital construction dollars. And I guess, has anybody, did you ask for the deferred maintenance list, and where is it? And I would submit to you, when you ask for it, it's going to be north of $20 million.
Senator Anderson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remember I had a bit of same issue, may have even used the term bake sale in that. I want to be real clear about this, though. I do support the bill. But what I talked about earlier in regard to supporting what the President said is it's very difficult to figure out what's going on here if you don't have a system of accountability. Now, within my district, like all districts probably in Wyoming, there are a lot of historical sites. These historical sites are not being maintained in such a way that they can be open readily to the public and that, and some of them are deteriorating. Now, that may be a capital improvement problem, or it may be a personnel problem. I'm not sure. But as we sort our way through this department in regard to what's going on, I need, in order to help move these things forward, a clear picture of where monies are coming from, where monies are being spent, and then where I can apply whatever influence I have in order to improve the problem. I would hope you would support the bill, but with the idea that we can do this in a more accountable fashion so we can truly identify where the problem lies and where we can work on the solution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion, Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I understand where a number of the legislators coming from on this, and I think that we could probably build into this thing some amendments to at least cover those issues. Like, for example, if we see that not fit to allow the Parks Department to use this for any kind of raises or salary increases or that sort, we could build that into it. We could build some additional accountability into this, I believe, with a fairly simple amendment to this and require them to come before the Appropriations Committee for any kind of the spending that they do on this on general means, and I think that could be accomplished.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I was actually reflect what the chairman of TRW just said. I was going to suggest something along those lines. Also, if we want, on second or third reading, put an amendment saying that this shall cause no additional employees without express permission of the legislature ahead of time. That's easy to do. We do that stuff all the time. And the other clarification I wanted to make is about the amenities fees. Those amenities fees that are specifically stated in statute refer to the use of the amenities. It's not for other amenities. It's, for instance, for a campsite or for the use of a dock or something like that. And that goes into the exact same fund that the entry fees go into and go to the same use. There is no other stream of funding going on there. This is actually, frankly, it's a relatively simple budget compared to a lot of other agencies.
House Bill 13, further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, and I think we've had a good discussion, but folks, really, where we're at today, if this bill fails, the budget will present the proper venue for us to have a discussion about what we should or shouldn't do. I believe there's a footnote 6 in the budget that addresses this already. So I think what we should do at this point in time, Mr. Chairman, is probably pass on this bill and understand that if you want to have the input of the members of the legislature, the proper place to do it is in the budget process.
Further discussion? The question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 13, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 13 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Okay. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I have a request of the chairman. I want you to do a constitutional interpretation of the president's movement of a House Bill 209 to the Journal Committee, and I think it's not germane to the title of the bill, and I think he operated outside his constitutional limits, and I'd like an opinion from you as to whether that was valid or not.
Mr.
President
Chairman,
Nicholas.
Just privilege of the floor.
Yes,
remember,
yes.
You can make whatever interpretation you want, but the president is the person that signs committee work.
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman, it's the floor leader that sets the agenda for general file. Mr. Chairman, with that, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Would the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 72, do pass. House Bill 67, do pass. House Bill 70, do pass. House Bill 41, do pass. House Bill 22, do pass. House Bill 3, do pass. House Bill 40, do pass, amended. House Bill 23, do pass. House Bill 19, do pass. House Bill 20, do pass. And House Bill 13, do pass. Senator Kinski, Chairman.
Chairman Kinski, you have a motion to make.
Mr. President, I move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion's been adopted. Do we have some messages? We have standing committee reports.
February the 10th, 2015, Mr. Prenier, Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 9, Engrossed, Alternative Fuel Taxation. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, and Peterson, Senator Peterson, Chairman. February the 10th, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 6, Engrossed, Airline Companies Assessment. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, and Peterson, Senator Peterson, Chairman. February the 10th, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 5, Property Tax Refund Program Extension. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Kinski, Landon, and Peterson. No, Senators Case and Driscoll, Senator Peterson, Chairman.
Does that complete our work? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, February the 11th.
Announcements, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room. House Bill 122, Workers' Compensation, Permanent Disability. House Bill 32, Engrossed, Hemp Extract Regulation.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands, Water Resources, will meet in about 10 minutes. That'd be 25 minutes till the hour, in room S15 to discuss House Joint 3, Engrossed Free-Roaming Wild Horses.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, will meet Wednesday, February 11th, upon adjournment in room S14 to consider the following bills. House Bill 74, Engrossed Front License Plate Requirement. House Bill 120, Engrossed Tribal License Plates. House Bill 115, Engrossed Vehicle Registration Timing. House Bill 100, Engrossed Highway Funding.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee Number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, 11th, at 8 a.m. in room S13 to discuss House Bill 73, Engrossed Development of Education Standards, and House Bill 86, Board of Cooperative Education Service Meetings.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee Number 1 will meet Wednesday morning, the 11th, at room S1 at 7 a.m. to consider House Bill 49, Confidentiality of Participants Involved in Execution, House Bill 47, Shipment of Wine, House Bill 18, Engrossed Drone Protection Act, House Bill 123, Engrossed Juvenile Records Expungement.
Senator Von Fledern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet about 20 minutes after noon recess to discuss House Bill 27, Engrossed NRC Agreement State Authorization, which is continued from Monday, and then House Bill 60, Engrossed Trust Company Amendments, and House Bill 54, Engrossed Corrective Action Account Distribution.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a reminder of the Governor's Prayer Breakfast?
Yes, I do, Mr. President. Mr. President, members of the Senate, for those of you that RSVP'd for the Governor's Prayer Breakfast, it is tomorrow, Wednesday at 7 a.m. at Little America. There's also a little note here that says be sure and set your alarm, but the senators get up early and do their good work early. The other thing, Mr. President, is I want to remind everybody that we will have our sell by committee Thursday at noon, and we are not going to miss that.
Any further message? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, February 11th.